Conversations with inspiring women about their stories and the neon colors that they have to share. This is the Neon Woman Podcast. Oh, hi. Welcome back to the Neon Woman Podcast. My guest this week is Kim Sorrell. Kim joins me to discuss her origin story, her breast cancer diagnosis, which was followed by her husband's own cancer diagnosis, how he passed just 6 weeks later, and how such a tragic event led to her one-year journey to figure out the meaning of love. Kim joins me to discuss her crazy journey through Haiti to find out what love really is, how she wrote her subsequent book, Love Is, from that experience, what it means to be a neon woman, and so much more. Kim's story is so inspiring, and I absolutely loved connecting with her, and I hope that you love our conversation. Here it is. Kim, welcome to the Neon Woman Podcast. Thank you for joining. I'm really excited to talk to you.
I have been really excited to talk to you. So thank you so much for having me.
I always like to start with the same question for everyone, because we're all known in the world for what we do. But I love to know, who is Kim aside from what you do?
I'm a mom. I'm a grandma. I have great friends. I love people. I love meeting new people. I love hearing people's stories. It just enriches my life. I love to travel and read and be grateful for everything I have.
Yeah, I love that. Well, this podcast is all about telling people's stories. And I love to hear about people's origin stories, because I believe that our childhoods and our upbringings can often shape the path that we head down as we get older. So I'd love to hear about your origin story.
Well, I grew up in a small town, just north of a larger town. So I had access to everything. It wasn't that small, but two older brothers, and I had to be a tomboy. So I played three sports in high school: basketball, volleyball, and softball. Wow. And I had wonderful parents. They weren't wonderful. They weren't a wonderful couple. My mom wasn't the greatest wife, as far as she just never learned it from her own mother. But she was a wonderful mom and a great grandma, and went to all my events, all my everything, all the time and whatever. And I grew up in the Catholic Church, and then went to other churches since. And I had a great upbringing. It was fun. I was involved in everything I could be involved in. I loved my childhood. I really had a great childhood.
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of relate a little bit to some of the things you said, like growing up a tomboy and just having a mum who was a really good mum, but just... yeah, I couldn't really ask for a better childhood, but in some ways it wasn't like the picture perfect childhood either.
Right. Well, it's so interesting because we only know what we know.
Yeah.
So, you know, to me, my childhood was the childhood, right? Yeah. Because that's what I knew. And then later in life, you hear other people's stories and you're like, I never got one of those. You know, yeah. I didn't never get to do that. What is that about?
Yeah. You start like unpicking the childhood and you're like, that's... other people didn't have it like that.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, the Neon Woman Podcast is all about... I love to hear people's stories about when your neon colors have been dimmed and how you found, you know, their brightness again, because I believe as a woman we all have neon colors to share, but sometimes they don't shine particularly bright. And you kind of have to find your way back to the brightness again.
That's so true. That's so true. Yeah. One of the moments in life for me dimming my colors was when I was diagnosed with breast cancer. And by a phone call at 3 o'clock on a Friday afternoon, you know, blah, 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 you have breast cancer, blah, blah, blah. There was nothing I could do. I mean, I couldn't call the doctor's office. I couldn't ask questions. You know, it's afternoon on Friday, the office closes. Wow. And I didn't even know how to react. And I just started crying and called my husband. And in a flash, he was home from work and held me, which is exactly the right thing to do for people listening out there. It is the right thing to do. He just held me tight and held me and held me. And we cried together because we didn't know what the future would bring. And cancer is such a scary word. And so, you know, you watch the Lifetime movies or, you know, you hear people's stories and it's not so great, you know. So anyway, but then I started writing because I went to the bookstore and everything was either very medical or very depressing. And I thought, I want to know what I'm going through. I want to know what it feels like. I want to know what choices I have to make and how to pick a doctor. You know, I wanted to know what the real journey of breast cancer was. And so I started writing partly as a way to update family and friends. I'm having surgery tomorrow, you know, whatever it happened to be. But it was so much more than that. It was what I was going through and how I was feeling about it. And then 4 months after I was diagnosed, my husband was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. And then he died 6 weeks later. And I continued to write during that time, continued to write for a little over a year. And there was so much that happened in a year's time, right? Like I went through my own cancer journey and then I went from being taken care of to being a caretaker. And then watching the love of my life fade away and so quickly in just 6 weeks and then becoming a widow at 47 years old, newly single when I thought I had my life laid out in front of me and knew what I was going to do and be that old couple in our 90s in rockers on the front porch sipping lemonade, right? If we're lucky, maybe a little vodka in the lemonade, who knows? But anyway, we were going to be that couple. And so it was the end of a dream. It was the end of what I thought it was going to be. We had just become empty nesters. And I was looking forward to that. You know, like I love my kids, but at some point they got to move out. And it's okay. You know, you want them to be independent. And so it was a tough time. It was a tough time. And I had to figure out who I was and what I was. And so all those writings became a book, my first book, Cry Until You Laugh, because that's what I had to do. You know, I had to mourn everything. You know, as a woman to have a double mastectomy, there's a little bit of mourning that goes on there, you know, to have part of your seemingly womanhood removed, you know, there's some mourning with that. And then my husband's diagnosis was a death sentence. We know that there just isn't things out there for pancreatic cancer. And so there was a lot of mourning going on, but trying to find the good in the midst of it, trying to find the lessons, trying to figure out who I was going to be, that you have to, I believe everybody has to, I had to come to a point where there was no longer this dark cloud over my head, but I was able to laugh again. And felt free to do that. Not that it felt like it was disrespectful to my husband or something like that, to enjoy life again. And that's, it just led me out of the dark cloud, realizing that life is still going on and can still be wonderful. And I think low too, part of it is that there's things in life that we don't choose. I would never have chosen to have cancer. I never would have chosen for my husband to have cancer. I never would have chosen to be widowed at 47 years old, but I had no control over those things. But what I do have control over, the choices I can make, is how I'm going to live and how much happiness I'm going to have and how much gratitude and enjoyment and optimism that I'm going to have. Those are choices that I can make.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, first of all, I'm so sorry for your loss. That's an incredible story. And I mean, when I talk about people's neon colors dimming, that's that your experiences, you know, the absolute extreme of that. And I just think that you're such an incredible woman to choose the positivity and find your way out from the darkness of that. It's really inspiring.
Well, thank you for that. That's really sweet of you to say. You know, I think we all have our things, right? We all have our stories. We all have our stuff we go through. And a lot of times it's not what happens to us, but how we react to it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, you then went on this quest, if you like, to find the meaning of love and what love is all about. Can you talk to me about what led to that decision and what that journey was like for you? I find that really interesting.
Sure. I loved my husband. We were in love and I had a great marriage. I was determined to have a great marriage because my parents didn't. And so I saw what a bad one was, and I wanted a good one. And we had a great marriage. And losing that love made me question if I really knew what love was, what the true meaning is, because you don't go to the bookstore and find a manual on love or love for dummies or whatever, right? So we learn love from our parents, from people around us, from our spouse, from our friends. And everything that we learn about love is not necessarily love. And there are lots of things done in the name of love that aren't really love. So I wanted to know, what is love really? What it is really? So I decided I would go on this quest. I would take a full year to figure out the true meaning of love. So I took this 2,000-year-old poem, Love is Patient, Love is Kind, Does Not Envy, Does Not Boast, one word at a time and one word a month to figure out, well, what is love that is patient? What is love that is kind? There happened to be 14 words and 12 months in a year. So the math didn't quite pan out. So it took me a bit longer than a year to do it. But what I found out blew my mind. I figured out that any word, when you put love is or love is not in front of it, it completely changes the meaning of the word.
That's interesting. Well, my first question is, what were your preconceived ideas about love and what it was before you started this journey?
I think the biggest thing is that it's so much deeper and more complex yet simpler than I ever knew. And that it is not an action. It's not just a verb. It's not like excitement or joy, you know, whatever. It is walking and talking and living and doing and breathing. And it's who you can be. You can be love to people. And it's who I want to be. I want to be love. And it's all encompassing.
Yeah. Well, what surprised you most in this quest that you took?
Like about different words. Patient is the very first one. And I thought, well, I know what patience is, you know. Everyone knows what patience is. You're not honking your horn when you're stuck in traffic, or you're not stomping your feet because you're ready to go and they're not ready to go. That's patience. But what I figured out about love that is patient is that you love the person you're with. I believe you're supposed to love everybody. And wouldn't it be a different world if we all did, right? Mm-hmm. And so love the person you're with, and showing them love that is patient is recognizing that this moment right here, right now, is the most important moment of your life. What's in the past is in the past, and what's in the future is yet to come. And this is something I had to really practice, to just be totally focused on who I'm with and totally focused and right here in the moment, and not lose this moment, because it's going to come and go, whether I'm in it or not. And so instead of thinking about, oh, on my way home from work, I got to stop and get some milk, or I've got a meeting later tonight, or distracted by things happening in the background or whatever it is, be fully focused with the one you're with. That is showing love that is patient.
Yeah. And it's almost showing that love is about being truly present as well.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That's a great word. Yes. Love that is patient is present.
Which is kind of hard to do, but it's presence is something you have to practice every day.
Yes. It took me a lot of practice. I'm easily distracted, probably got some ADD going on. And so it took me a lot of practice to really focus. Yeah. But you know, the thing that I found is that because I do, because I've been practicing this for a while, and because I am fully focused, I hear a whole different way. Mm. So instead of thinking, oh, this is how I'm going to respond, I really listen to the words. And instead of having preconceived notions about, oh, I know how she feels about this, I know what he's going to say, I just listen, mm-hmm. listen to it, what's actually being said. And it changes things. It makes it so that you have conversations instead of confrontations.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. That's great. Well, who did you meet on your quest? Where did your journey literally and, you know, not so literally take you? Because it took you to physical places, but it also took you to just these emotional depths, I can imagine.
Yeah, so true. So true. Mm-hmm. So the majority of the time that I was doing this, I was in Haiti. Oh. I run a nonprofit organization and we were doing work in Haiti. And so I start each chapter with what I think it's going to be, what I think that particular word or phrase means. And then I tell the story of what happens mostly in Haiti that brings me to the real understanding. And it took me a full month. Sometimes I was at the end of the month going, I'm supposed to move on to the next word and I still don't get this one. What am I supposed to do? But every month it would happen, but it would take me the full month to figure it out. And so interesting things happened because Haiti's an interesting place. And so I was chased by a motorcycle gang. I got lost on a mile-high mountain with a medical student in the dark. I slept outside with tarantulas and snakes and chupacabras and I don't know, whatever kind of animals are living in Haiti. And so there were, you know, some deeply spiritual moments of sadness. And then there were some funny, crazy things that happened. And then my adrenaline pumping more than ever before.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds wild.
Yeah, it was wild for sure.
What surprised you most during your quest?
Well, one of the words that really surprised me, because I feared it. It was the one I dreaded the most. It says that love keeps no record of wrongs. And I thought, oh, well, you don't forget what happens to you. You know, like, what does that even mean? You know, that love doesn't keep a record of wrongs. You know, it's one thing to say in your head, yeah, I'm not going to be bitter about that, right? Or whatever. But what does it really mean? And so I happened to be with these gentlemen from the United States, 8 men, who wanted to see a water project that I was working on at the time and wanted me to go with them to Haiti to show them. So it was the 8 American men and I brought 2 Haitian friends who both happened to be men, and I went out to this remote area and we got to where we were staying and there were 2 rooms in a small building with a cement wall around it. And in each room, there were 4 twin size beds. So 8 men, 2 more from Haiti and me. So the head guy from the United States pulled me aside. He said, Kim, can I talk to you? I said, sure. And he said, did you see the rooms? And I'm thinking, buddy, there's nothing else to see. You know, that is all we have here. And then I thought, oh, he's asking me because he's going to think I want my own room. So I'm going to say to him, oh, it's okay. I'll sleep outside. And he'll say, no, no, no. If anyone should sleep inside, it should be you. And then I'll say, well, I don't care if there's other people in the room. And he'll say, oh, good, because there's only so many beds. So I said, well, it's okay. I'll sleep outside. And he said, oh, good, good. Because it would be horrible for a lot of these men to have a woman in their room. And I'm thinking, what is going to happen in the middle of the night in hot, hot Haiti, where you only go into the room to sleep? I had no idea what was on this guy's mind, but I said I'd sleep outside. So there I was. And so I saw this piece of plywood that was held up by a couple of whatever sort of sawhorse things, you know, whatever. And I thought, well, if I sleep under there, at least if it rains, I'm safe from the rain. And then see what happens. And we brought an air mattress along, and we brought two cots along. And there was room for the cots in the room, in the rooms, but my Haitian friends weren't gonna let me sleep outside alone. And there was an overhang that they were able to be under, and the cots. So the first night I went to bed, and my biggest fear was that something would crawl on me, land on me, bite me, whatever it would do to me, right? And there are tarantulas, and there are snakes, and there are creepy crawly things there, and I didn't want any of it. And so I'd pray, please, please, please don't let anything happen. So the first night I go to bed, and the air mattress held air for about an hour. And it was so loud because horns were honking and dogs were barking. And finally that quieted down, and I thought I'd get some sleep. But then voodoo drums started in the distance. And so then that kept me awake. And so then a couple hours after that, finally, I don't know, 4 a.m., 5 a.m., I was able to doze off. And so the first night came and went without incident. Everything was just fine. Second night, same thing. My air mattress is dead after an hour. It's loud, the dogs, the horns, the voodoo drums. Finally, I dozed off and I woke up because there was something on my leg. And I was afraid to look. I thought, oh my word, what can it be? If it bites me, does Haiti have the anti-venom? Am I gonna have to be airlifted to Miami? Am I gonna lose a limb, my life? I didn't have any idea what was gonna happen. I didn't. So I slowly lifted my head and I slowly opened my eyes to see what it was. And it was a chicken. There was a dang chicken on my leg. And I didn't know whether to be mad because this chicken woke me up from the little bit of sleep that I was getting, or happy that it was a chicken and not something much, much worse, right? So I shooed it away and whatever. And the third night came and went, and it was like the first, nothing happened. Then the fourth night, again, the dogs, the horns, the voodoo drums, and finally sleeping. And again, I woke up because there was something on my leg. So again, I slowly lifted my head and slowly opened my eyes, and it was the dang chicken. Again, it was the chicken. And again, I didn't know whether to be happy or mad, but we had chicken that night for dinner. So my fifth night was just fine. Nothing crawled or landed on me. And for a while I was kind of bitter toward these guys. Like, really, there's eight of them. And not one of them stepped up and said, shouldn't a woman sleep inside? I mean, yeah. I am all about equality, absolute equality for sure. But I am a woman. There is a difference between women and men. And I was thinking, I hope my sons wouldn't treat a woman like that. Like, they better not, you know, whatever. And so it shocked me that all eight of these guys thought it was fine for me to sleep outside. And I was bitter. I was kind of angry. Like, I came here for them, and they put me in this position where I got no sleep all week, very little sleep all week. And then I realized love does not keep record of wrongs. So we don't forget the things that happen to us. I will forever remember that story. Forever, I'll remember that story. But instead of being bitter and angry and holding a grudge of some sort, the narrative changed. So instead of this angry story, anger against these men and disappointment and whatever against these guys, now it's just this funny thing that happened to me. And now I could literally sleep anywhere in the world and be perfectly comfortable. Yep. And so it's the tone of the story that changes. You know, bitterness only hurts us. And a lot of times the person you're bitter toward doesn't even know that you're bitter. Mm. And so it's eating away at you. And yet they're just living their life. And so love doesn't do that. Love isn't bitter. Love doesn't keep a record that way. Love changes the narrative and changes the story without forgetting what happened.
Yeah, I love that. That's so interesting. It's completely true, but I feel like you have to kind of experience a crazy story like that to really realize it.
Yeah, you know, I think so many of the words of the 14 are, once you hear them, are pretty, or can be kind of obvious, like, wow, I never looked at it that way before. But in looking at it that way, yes, you can do it. Like, anybody can achieve it. Yeah. Anybody can achieve real love.
Yeah, I love that. Well, you wrote a book from your quest, which is called Love Is, a Year-Long Experiment. You've kind of already talked about a little bit of that journey, but what was the writing experience like for you?
It was therapeutic. It was good to get things down on paper after experiencing them, to tell the stories, to because it was so mind-blowing to me how it would happen every single month, month after month, that I would be so woken up to the meaning of love, the meaning of that word of love. And so it felt really great to get it down on paper. And I started each chapter with what I thought it was, like I said, and it never was what I thought it was going to be, ever, not even close to what I thought it was going to be. And so that was really good for me too, to be able to go back at that and go, wow, now I see the truth of it, but this is what I used to think. And there's probably a lot of people that think the way I think, you know, perhaps. And so it was really good for me to see the difference, the big difference in what I thought and the reality.
Yeah. Well, through all of your experiences that you had, what do you now define love as, and how do you choose to live? How do you choose to live through love now?
Well, there's a couple things about love that I think are misunderstood. One is that it's a two-way street, and it's not. You live love, you give love, period. The minute you expect anything in return, then you're doing something to get something, and that's not love. Mm. So you love regardless of what comes back at you, because you can't control other people. They control themselves, and they decide how much love they want to live or give or whatever they want to do. But you have control of yourself. And so you give with zero expectations of anything in return. Most of the time, I got to say, when you live this way, when you really love people, it is returned to you in their kindness, or, you know, in other ways, and you're loved back. But that's not why you love. That can't be your motivation for love. And even, you know, and I'm talking any relationship, a friendship, your neighbor, your spouse, your partner, you know, whatever, that you just give love, period. And love is not confrontational, and it's not judgmental. You love the person for who they are. You don't judge their lifestyle or judge what they do for a living or judge how they behave or anything else. It's not up to you. All you have to do is love, which then is complete freedom. There is no freedom like loving. When you are just free to love and don't have to worry about judging, you don't have to worry about giving unsolicited advice, you know, or anything like that, or not liking someone or whatever, all you have to do is love. It is a freedom that that you can't experience any other way.
Sounds like the true definition of unconditional love, which is you just love and you don't expect anything back from that person. You just give out the love that you have, and no matter who that person is or what they do or what they give back to you in return.
Right, right, exactly. That's exactly it, unconditional.
Yeah,
for sure.
That's really beautiful. Well, what is the most surprising thing you've learnt about yourself through all the different seasons of your life?
That I am strong, that I'm resilient and strong. And I always thought I was strong. I've been confident, but there's a newborn confidence when you've been through things, and it should make you stronger, right? And I like the fact that you don't go through things in vain, or it doesn't have to be in vain. So the experiences that I've had, like I can talk to a woman with breast cancer way different than I could have if I've never had it.
Yeah.
I can talk to a woman who's lost her spouse way different because I've been through it. So the things that we go through in life can be these incredible tools in this beautiful tool chest that, yeah, they were tough experiences, but to be used for good, to be able to help other people through the tough times. You know, if you, every time you use one of those tools, you become stronger. It builds up that muscle and makes you a stronger person.
Yeah. Yeah, amazing. Do you love poetry? Have you ever just wanted a little bit of inspiration to start your day? A Poem a Day by Lo Mackett is that magical book of inspiration you've been looking for. One poem a day for every day of the year. Available now on Amazon. Go and get your copy today. For more information, go to lomackett.com or neonwoman.com. Well, I'd love to switch the focus to the Neon Woman questions. I ask everyone who comes on the podcast the same questions, and it's always kind of interesting. People's answers are often very similar, even though, you know, it's just a bunch of people who've never met before, never discussed these questions with each other. So my first question is, what's the one song you play to brighten your neon colors?
All You Need Is Love by the Beatles.
Yes.
I love it because all you need is love. You don't need anything else. If you have love, everything else falls into place. And it's my anthem, you know, because love is enough.
I love it. I have a Neon Colors playlist for the podcast on Spotify, so I'll add that song to it.
That's great. I love that. That's awesome.
Well, Kim, what about Love Is Wild to you?
The thing about love that's wild to me is that in order to really give love and live it, you have to love yourself. And it's really important to love yourself. And it's not an ego thing or a vain thing. It's a reality thing. If you don't love yourself, you're not going to fully love anybody else. So I think that's wild that it has to start with you.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really true. I think loving yourself is the hardest part sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Right. Give yourself a break. You give other people a break, give yourself a break, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about your fashion sense is original?
Well, heels go with everything. I'm 5'1¾", if I stretch a little bit. So I was born in heels. And you can wear heels with, I wear heels all the time with anything that I have on. So that is my fashion statement.
I relate to that. I'm 5'2" or thereabouts, and I've always worn heels, always. But they just go, you're right, they go with absolutely everything.
Yeah, they do.
What do you do to keep your mindset magnificent?
I think the biggest thing that I do to keep my mindset magnificent is gratitude. If when I'm just grateful for the things that I have, everything that I have, and grateful for all of it and truly grateful and not ungrateful for things I don't have, that keeps me in a great place, a great headspace, because I am so grateful. I have so much to be grateful for. And so expressing that daily.
Yeah, I went through a process where I was doing that daily, but then I found I was repeating. Like, I gave myself the challenge to write 10 things I was grateful for every day. And I found that I couldn't always find 10 new things. So I was just repeating certain ones every day. And I just thought, is this like the right way to do it? Because I feel like I'm just kind of being repetitive for the sake of having 10 things on the list.
Well, you know, what's interesting is I think sometimes we feel like we have to say, oh, I'm grateful I have a car, and I'm grateful I have a house. I'm grateful I have food on the table, right? Well, and of course we are. Of course, you're grateful for those things. And if you're thinking that way, then you think it has to be something big. But when it comes down to it, I'm grateful that I have this sweater on right now that's, you know, keeping me warm in Michigan. I'm grateful that I get to talk to you. I'm grateful that I have this computer screen that allows me to see you when we're talking, you know? And so it can come down to the smallest things that when you think about it, you really are grateful for it. Because if you didn't have it, you'd be in a different spot, right? So
yeah.
Even the little things, the little tiny things. And so then you could probably come up with more than 10 a day thinking yeah. that way.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Maybe I'll start again. Where is the most adventurous place you've traveled to?
I've been to a lot of adventurous places, but I would have to say the slums of Mumbai.
Oh, wow.
In India. Yes. I was just kind of blown away. It's I've been in a lot of slums because I run a nonprofit and we work with people in need. And but it was so interesting to me how it's run. You know, there are whatever it is, 1 million, 2 million people that live in the slums of Mumbai, and you know, children to adults to, you know, whoever, but there's classrooms for kids. The kids can go to school and people can work. They recycle. So some people, it's their job to go find plastic on the streets. And some people, it's their job to wash and sort it. And other people, they bundle it to sell it. And everybody down the line gets paid for what they've done in the process. And I just found it amazing, just amazing how people with not a whole lot are so creative in figuring out how to put food on the table.
And they're still running a community. It's incredible.
Yeah, it really is incredible, for sure.
Yeah, that is amazing. What is necessary to you to have a healthy lifestyle? Healthy can mean whatever you would like it to mean.
Yeah, I would say in order for me to have a healthy lifestyle, I need to be surrounded by good people. And I need to be positive, be, you know, glass half full, not glass half empty. And I need to avoid white food. So potatoes and white flour, and the biggest one for me is sugar. And so then it's healthy mind, healthy body, healthy spirit. And those are my components.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. Which woman or women are inspirational to you? They can be famous or non-famous.
I am truly inspired by Rosa Parks. She is a woman, if anybody doesn't know, she stood up against racism. She sat on the bus where people of color were not allowed to sit in that place on the bus. And she did it anyway. She took a stand against racism. This kind of unassuming woman said, enough is enough, I've had it, and stood up for justice. And I believe so strongly in standing up for justice. It's so easy to kind of turn away from it and not recognize it, any sort of injustices. You know, somebody's being harmed in any way. It's easier a lot of times to turn your head than it is to stop what's going on. And Rosa Parks was the catalyst to so many things that happened. And I just admire her strength and womanhood. Like, she's fabulous lady.
Yeah, she's an incredible woman. It's a really empowering story that I feel like should never be forgotten. It's just, yeah, when people stand up to justice, it does so much good in the world.
Right, it really does. And injustice is tough. And it happens in so many ways, you know, from bullying at school and, you know, for a kid to have the guts to stand up to a bully and say, hey, stop picking on my friends, you know, or whatever. That's not an easy thing to do. But, or, you know, we throw away food because it rots in the refrigerator while people don't have food today. And that's injustice. So what can you do about getting food to people that don't have it? Or education is free in the United States through high school and in some places, even university. And there are places in the world that have no education, or like in Haiti, where I spend a lot of time, schools are available, not enough classrooms for every kid who lives in Haiti, but the public education is free, but it really isn't because there are shoes that you have to wear those shoes and you have to wear this uniform. Those things cost money. Yeah. You have to have pencils. You have to pay for the tests that you take. Those things cost money. And when you are living on $3, $5 a day to feed and house and clothe your entire family, to buy shoes, to buy a uniform, that's a lot. That's a lot of money. Well, that's not right. That's not right. And we need to take a stand.
Absolutely. My last question, and I always like to ask this just off the cuff. What does being a Neom woman mean to you?
I think it means being authentic, not trying to be anybody except for who you are, who you were made to be. Let yourself be that person. It's fine and wonderful to have role models and to look up to people. Like, that's really good. But recognize that you are who you are and let yourself be that and celebrate that you're different from everybody else. Be the real you. Live the real you. And forget about the naysayers. Forget about people who would stand in judgment and say, that's not the way you should live, or that's not who you should be, or you need to dress a certain way, or you need to act a certain way, go to certain places, whatever it is. No, you don't. You don't need to do any of those things. You just need to be you. You just need to be you. Be authentic.
I love that. Be authentic. Kim, this has been a really wonderful conversation. Where can people connect with you? Where can they buy your books? Tell me all of the stuff.
Yeah, so my books are available everywhere online. They're in brick and mortar stores in the US. I don't know if they are in other countries, but they are in the US, like at Barnes and Noble, you know, places like that. And but they're available easy to find. Love Is, hopefully, is an easy title to remember. And my name is my website, so kimsorrell.com. And Sorrell has way too many letters. It's because it has two R's, two E's, two L's, S-O-R-R-E-L-L-E. And I am literally the only Kim Sorrell spelled that way in the entire world. So wow. I'm pretty easy to find. But Facebook, Instagram, you know, any of the social platforms. And I love to hear from people. I've got a love challenge on my website, 14-day love challenge, and that anybody can go to and do, and it's free to do. And I even will send out a gift if you complete the challenge. I have a WWLD wristbands. So there was a craze a while ago, WWJD, what would Jesus do?
Yeah.
And Jesus is different to different people, you know. To some he's peace and light and love and God, and to some he's a heretic, you know. And so different people would answer that question different ways, but love is universal. Mm-hmm. So if you do things thinking, well, what would love do? We should all kind of have the same answer to that one.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I'll put all of the links in the show notes, and just wanted to say thank you for coming on the podcast. It's been really inspiring.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I love your podcast. Everyone should listen to it. Everyone in the world should listen to you.
Thank you.
You have you do a great job with people. I really enjoyed today.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you for listening to the Neon Woman podcast, a Neon Network production. Follow Neon Woman on Instagram and Facebook, or check out neonwoman.com for all the latest episodes and so much more. Thanks for listening.